This episode of the Ottawa Entrepreneurs Podcast is brought to you by Extension Marketing, the marketing agency that specializes in unique needs and budgets of small to medium-sized businesses. They provide turnkey marketing solutions that get results. You can find out more today at extmarketing.ca. Now here's your host, Pat Whalen.
This episode features Dave Hale. Dave is the co-founder and CEO of Social. Social is a design studio that delivers both consumer and enterprise digital product design services. He's been recognized as one of Marketing Magazine's 30 Under 30, Profit Magazine's 20 Under 30, and Social has won numerous awards, including the Best Ottawa Business Award for Outstanding New Business, the Ottawa Business Journal's Companies to Watch, and was ranked the second fastest growing company in Ottawa last year. I hope you enjoy the show. So welcome to the show, Dave.
Thanks, Pat. Thanks for having me. It's great to be here.
Dave, for our listeners that don't know Social or may not have heard of Social, can you tell us a little bit about your company, what you do, and when you started?
Great. I have no idea really what we do, so this is going to be tough. No, I'm kidding. So we for a lack of a better term, we're a design firm, but I think what it is that we design is fairly unique in the sense of we're very interested in kind of the human system, I guess, in the sense of you know, I think we've gone through an evolution from designing websites to designing products, software, mobile apps, things like that. And now I think what we're trying to do anyway is move into this kind of human systems design where, you know, I've kind of stated internally that, you know, in 10 years, will Social be working as the kind of design partner for biomedical engineering firms and things like that, designing new kinds of health systems or transit systems or architecture systems? I think that's what we're really trying to do. So, yeah, for lack of a better term, we're a design firm, and a lot of what we do is designing of digital products. But I think where we're trying to go is creating that interface between what quote-unquote digital is with a human system. So that's what we do.
And Dave, Social has been around for how long now?
So we started in 2010, so we're in our sixth year. Every year is a bit different, and this one is turning up to be so as well.
So maybe you can take our listeners through the evolution, because I know you didn't start off, you know, the way you just described the company. I know you didn't start off that way. Maybe you can try to, you know, just give our listeners a sense of how the business has evolved in the last 6 years.
Sure. You know, it's funny. Like, I think that our success is also our curse at the same time. So almost from day one, my partners and I, we always were interested in kind of the evolution of our business and you know, and maybe it's from ignorance or whatever it is, but when we started, we always had these big ideas of what we would be, you know, 10, 20 years out, and they're always pretty crazy. And so, you know, when we started actually doing social media, we didn't even want to be honest. Even the name of our company, Social, that's where it comes from, because that's what people would pay us to do. When we first launched, I think we actually wanted to do kind of what we do now. We were young and no one would actually hire us to do some of these crazy things with no experience, really, understandably now, I guess. But so what people would say to us is, hey, you seem like really smart guys. How about you handle this this Facebook thing or this Twitter thing? And to be completely honest, we were not overly excited to do so because that wasn't really what we wanted to do. But, you know, as entrepreneurs, that's what people were willing to pay for us to do. So we said, hey, sure, let's do it. And so I think those early days, I would categorize what we kind of did. We were the social media firm that publicly came out and said that we thought social media was really dumb, and that we thought that you know, people who only looked at it as far as likes and tweets and engagement rating and all that kind of stuff were like, this is ridiculous. Like, we need to have real business metrics and ROI attached to what we do in this space. And I think that happened because we honestly weren't overly passionate about just being a social media firm. And that's probably, you know, that kind of rebellious entrepreneurialism, I think, has always been a part of what we are. And so from there, we kind of, you know, have evolved. And like I said, every year is a bit different. And I think that's done on purpose, where we went from, you know, social media to kind of broader strokes, digital agency, then starting to focus a little bit more on digital design and development. And then, you know, kind of our latest evolution was more into that kind of product design firm. And then, like I said, now here we are in year six, where we are actively pitching, you know, transit groups, health, kind of deeper education issues. We have a big portfolio in education, but, you know, getting out of the building websites for education and getting more into the development of new learning management systems or things like that. So that's really our evolution. And, you know, it's funny, like we actually are just talking internally recently about, you know, what made us really successful when we first launched. And to be honest, I think we were a very polarizing brand. And sorry, I'm not ranting, but I think we were a very polarizing brand when we first launched. And sometimes that's good, you know, when you have no real credibility or anything. So to stand up and come out and say, you know, we are a social media firm that thinks all this stuff is pretty dumb, that caught a lot of people's attention, right? And it split us in two camps. I'm sure there was people on Twitter who had guru or expert in their description of who they were on Twitter, who probably really hated us because we publicly state that we thought that was, you know, really ridiculous title to give yourself. And then there's other people, like, you know, CEOs of corporations with revenue over $300 million. So probably people as an entrepreneur who you actually care about and want to talk to, who really bought into our ideas. And I think that is what helped us back then. So now we're actually in this place where we're trying to figure out that kind of rebellious entrepreneurialism again. Like, how can you position yourself to be a little bit polarizing in today's day and age compared to, you know, the landscape of 6 or 7 years ago?
So do you see, you know, you mentioned, you know, that polarizing aspect to it. Is that something is this a specific strategy, or is it more the nature of the partners? And I guess what I'm getting at, Dave, is this a strategy you would recommend to the entrepreneurs that are listening, or the would-be entrepreneurs that are listening?
You know, I think it's both, right? So I think that, I went to this branding conference in Banff in February of this year, and while the word was repeated ad nauseum, this idea of authenticity of your brand was really what they kept saying over and over and over again. And you know what? I think that social is an authentic brand. You know, I think that if you meet with myself, my business partner, some members of our leadership team, or our whole team, you know, hopefully, that kind of, I keep using this term rebellious entrepreneurialism, but I hope that kind of does come across. So I think they're intertwined, and I think every entrepreneur can have a bit of a different stance. You know, one of the things that we try to pride ourselves on is how do you have this kind of rebellious streak without being pretentious about it, right? How do you have opinions without offending people? That's something I actually learned from, 6 years ago, where I totally offended people with my state of the nation on our industry and stuff like that. And now, you know, more mature, it is how do you have opinions and strong opinions without offending others? So I think our brand is just interwoven. I think I have a personality where I'm very opinionated, and I think now that kind of translates in through our business as well. But it's a very fine line to walk. Absolutely, you know. But I would rather be honest and authentic than you listen to some entrepreneurs sometimes. And again, this is not meant to put anyone down, but you listen to people either on podcasts like this, or you know, you see them give presentations and you can just tell that they're fake, you know, like they just talk like robots, like not real people. And I'm like, there's no way you actually think and feel and act this way. Like, just be real. And I think that's what we are. We're a very real brand. What you see is what you get. Not unlike a good content management system.
So Dave, you know, this, that kind of rebellious side, is that why you ended up going into business for yourself at a very young age?
You know, it's funny, like, I you know that you're getting older when people start or stop asking you that question more and more. So thank you for doing so. I guess I'm not that old yet, but honestly, I don't know. I think that I grew up very fortunate to work for a very entrepreneurial family and you know, a really exciting small business. I got to play a big role in that business at a very young age. And honestly, I just think it's one of those things where, you know, while it wasn't my parents, you know, kind of the next best thing. And I just think I was one of those kids who grew up in quote unquote an entrepreneurial family, and I didn't know any different, you know? So, the idea of starting my own business, honestly, it was never, I think I'm holier than thou or, you know, I'm doing this cause I'm entitled to start a business. It was just what I did. You know, I think that's the simplest way to put it.
So, you know, you mentioned the line of work that you're in and digital space, and you must have seen so many changes. I mean, if there's any one industry category that's moving fast and constantly changing direction, it's the one you're in. So maybe you can talk a little bit about some of the changes you've seen in the last 6 years, and what do you see coming? I won't even say in 5 years, because I think that would be too hard to predict, but what changes do you see coming up in the future for your industry?
I mean, it's a big question. Obviously there's a ton of change. I think what can happen, especially as a small firm. So I'll just talk to our experience and not so much the, you know, the industry at large, because there's like a thousand different paths I could go down. Right. But, I think what can happen in our industry is that you can be leapfrogged really easily. And it actually did happen to us, you know, like I'll be honest, social missed, the mobile, craze. Absolutely missed it. Like we started in social media before social media was cool. And that was fine. So we hit that one. You know, I think we hit that right at the right time. And we did that for a few years. And then we got really bogged down in kind of this enterprise scale, web design and development. And again, as an entrepreneur, it's you know, you got cash flow, you got people to pay, and you know, when someone's offering you, you know, some, you know, pretty ridiculous price tags to design these enterprise systems, you take it and it works. But I think because we were so in the weeds of doing that for a few years, we weren't able to. And it's not that we didn't see it coming or that it was already here. Like, I mean, to say we didn't see mobile coming is ridiculous, obviously. But I just think we didn't put the right emphasis or energy into it. And that's something we've now corrected. You know, a big percentage of our work is in mobile and that's fine, but we totally missed it. Went to be like a first to market, you know, provider, service provider. I think, so what when you think of it that way, a small firm will always get leapfrogged in some way or another, right? And I think what your job is in this crazy fast paced space is to say like, well, this is what I do today. This is what's coming up in the immediate future. And then what is the next step after that? And I think the good firms, and hopefully we're one of them, you recognize that you don't have the resources to do everything. So when I said we missed, when we missed mobile initially, now I don't look at it as such a bad thing. So I think we were really strong in social and web. We kind of missed mobile. But then, because we missed mobile, we were able to focus a little bit, more on kind of the trend of just good product design and not thinking of mobile as a specific thing. And, you know, I think now that's helped us a lot. We get a lot of work, just doing general product design for software and apps, where it's not so much about designing for the device. It's just designing a great experience or a great interface. And so when I look forward now, to be honest, and again, this is no way, I'm sure tons of listeners are, you know, they're probably looking, as they're listening to this podcast, they're probably reading blogs or articles about what I'm about to say right now. So it's not meant to offend anyone. But I think the next thing that people are talking about is the Internet of Things and IoT. And I think we at Social, we're taking this stance that just like when we launched our social media firm in 2010, where we thought it was kind of odd that people were talking about social media as like this coming to Jesus kind of thing. Like, it's just, yeah, of course that was happening. You know, I grew up in a, it you know, puts a date on me, whether that's positive or negative, but you know, I grew up chatting on MSN with my friends every night for hours on end, eating up my parents' you know, they could never make a phone call because, you know, the internet was on all the time and I was on MSN talking to people. Maybe my generation just didn't really see social media as like a thing, you know, whereas if you were in your 30s or 40s or beyond in 2010, you thought of this as like some crazy new way of communicating. But really for our generation, people in their 20s, it wasn't that much of a big leap from stuff we were already doing. And I actually kind of feel the same way about this Internet of Things movement right now, where, you know, by next year even or 2 years, like we're not going to even, you know, no one will use the term IoT. No one will use the term Internet of Things. It's just, it's the internet. Like for me in my generation, this idea that, you know, I have a thermostat that is connected to the internet, or that, you know, my fridge can tell me if something's expired, or I've got a Rogers smart home monitoring system. Like, that's just kind of like what I expect, actually, to be honest. And our team feels kind of the same way. And lots of people my age I talk to, we also feel the same way. It's not this like crazy kind of concept to us that, you know, that all our devices are connected, that the cloud is prevalent. So I think what we're trying to do is say, there's people who are playing in this quote unquote IoT space. And you know, and we're not going to put a ton of energy into this conversation around the Internet of Things. We want to talk about what's after that. Like once all these things are connected, then what's happening. And so I think you need to really look in our industry at like the big trends. Like the Internet of Things is taking the internet, which has been around for 25 years, and just attaching it to more stuff. That's not like a big next level kind of movement in digital, in my opinion. Go ahead.
Yeah, I was just gonna say, Dave, I want to go back to something that you mentioned that I think our listeners would find interesting. You know, you meant you when you're first starting out, you're taking whatever work kind of comes your way. You've got bills to pay, you have overhead, etc. Is there lessons you could pass on to those people that are listening that are just starting out and maybe feeling a bit of that overwhelm where, you know, the work's coming their way and they're just taking it because they've got bills to pay? Is that just the reality of it and that's what you have to do?
You know, not to use the same answer twice, but I think it's both. I think if I could go back and do it again, I would have taken on that work, absolutely. But I would have just had, you know, always kind of one foot in, one foot out on what it is we're doing today and what it is we're going to do tomorrow, and never let myself be so totally immersed in just the day-to-day. I mean, that's what technically a CEO is supposed to do, but I think when you're a small company, that title is even a ridiculous title because, like, you know, chances are you are just working in the weeds day-to-day. So yeah, I think it's both. I think you do have to take the work on, absolutely, because if you want to grow, you need the funds to do so. But at the same time, you need to make sure that a percentage of your, you know, in our case, we're a services company, a percentage of our portfolio has to be in that kind of what's next, if you want to be a part of that what's next when it actually comes.
And it reminds me of something one of my old bosses told me once. He said, you know, Pat, you can do anything you want. You just can't do everything you want at the same time in business. And that always kind of stuck with me, that it's, you know, you're trying to be all things to all people. You're not finding your area of expertise. But yeah, at the end of the day, like you say, it's tough. It's tough when people are starting out. Dave, I just want to switch tactics a little bit here and talk about marketing. If you could give our listeners, you know, kind of one marketing strategy that you think would help them grow their business, what would that be?
You know, it's tough because obviously, like every business is different, right? So if you're B2B, if you're a SaaS company, if you're a services firm like us, if you're a restaurant, I mean, everyone's different. But I think something that either first-time entrepreneurs or young entrepreneurs really underestimate is the power of traditional media in this age of digital media. And when I say traditional, I just mean traditional media outlets. Obviously, they also have a digital presence now, and in some cases, in a big way. What I really mean is just, in our experience, one of the fastest ways to get traction is to just get your story told in a broad context. So that can either be by giving if you give a presentation in front of 500 people, that's a pretty broad, you know, audience that you can reach. if you can get on, CTV News, that's a pretty broad audience still. And, cause then it gets shared online and it's all good. And I think that's it. I mean, I think people don't give enough lip service to the value of the reach that large scale media can provide. And I think everyone puts a lot of energy into, these very micro strategies of I'm going to invest in all this blog content, and over the course of several months it's going to get traction and people are going to pay attention to it. And honestly, we never took that approach. I think, and this is what I mean, like we're probably the worst digital marketers that ran a digital marketing firm. And but we never really took that approach. We realized that, hey, if I can win marketing magazines 30 under 30, I will get more attention from the types of clients that we want to get in the door with than, a year of writing digital content. And so that's what we focused on, and it worked for us.
It's interesting you say that, because I still run into that, when I'm working with our own clients, the total emphasis always seems to be on digital, and yes, that's important, and it's got to be a key part of the strategy, but it's just that it's part of a strategy. It's not the entire strategy. So yeah, I agree with you for sure. Traditional media still has its place, just not the place it once did. Dave, as an entrepreneur, you got to wear many hats and you come in every day, and how do you prioritize your day, and do you have a typical morning routine to follow?
So I'm probably, I probably obsess about this. I know my peak performance times for myself, and they actually reside between like 5 a.m. and 8 a.m. and then kind of like 6 p.m. and 8 p.m. at night. Like those are my two times of the day where if I need to like really sit at my computer and, whether it's writing a proposal or doing some, actual work for a client or, something that requires intense concentration, those are the times of the day where I have to get it done. So my morning routine is pretty simple. I quite literally, alarm goes off at, hopefully at 5, and I just kind of roll out of bed. And generally speaking, I just get to work right away because I'm kind of in that peak performance period right out of the gate. Usually that dies off between 7:30 or 8. Get ready, come into the office, as our teams grow, and you've got, I think as your team grows, you really can't actually try to schedule your day all that well if you are an accessible executive. I don't think you can really have that much structure to your day, because it's just, you're either going to get meetings, or you're going to get, you want to give feedback to your team, or you're going to get phone calls, you jump on podcasts like this. It's hard to structure, I find, between that 9 to 5. And for years I tried to structure it, and now I just don't. I actually just say I'll structure, between 6 and 8 a.m. and I'll structure between 6 and 8 p.m. And everything else in the middle is kind of a free-for-all. I know that between kind of 1 p.m. and 4 p.m., like there's no chance I'm going to be able to do something that requires concentration. So I just don't even try anymore. It's a great period for, catching up on email or reading or just having those kind of lightweight meetings with your team. So that's kind of what my day looks like.
And what advice would you give to our listeners out there that are not entrepreneurs yet but are thinking of starting their own business?
Don't do it. No, I'm kidding. I there's a lot of people who talk about like entrepreneurship as if it's, what I call big E entrepreneurs, so capital E entrepreneurs, people who they wear the patch. You read their LinkedIn profile and, it's like entrepreneur is the term that they use to define themselves. I think that if your intentions for getting into entrepreneurship are because you can't work for somebody else, because you want to be your own boss, because you want to make a ton of money, or because any reason like that, I think is a really bad reason for becoming an entrepreneur. I think I'm someone who I've actually kind of learned over my, I've been doing this longer than just social too. I've been, doing entrepreneurial stuff for, over a decade. And I think that this idea that you are your own boss is like a crock of, whatever. I've got, dozens of clients. I've got, dozens of staff. I've got people you're accountable to. And that's really what responsibility is. You're accountable to others. So if you want to be an entrepreneur because you think that you're going to work for yourself, you don't. You all, if you don't have customers that you're working for, then you're not a real entrepreneur either. So I think that myth needs to be dispelled. I think you go into entrepreneurship just because it just feels right. You know, it's a gut thing where, and that's how it was for me anyway. I never overcomplicated it. It was just, yeah, I want to start a business. I want to try this experience. Maybe it works out. Maybe it doesn't. And if it doesn't work out, then I'll go work for someone. And I still have that attitude today. You know, I get job offers through LinkedIn and stuff, which I always think is a little odd. It's like, well, you really think I'm just going to leave my business and go work anyway? But sometimes it hits you, and you're like, hey, that would be a cool job. Like, maybe if this thing were falling apart, I would just go and I'd take that on. So I think you got to get out of that big E entrepreneur state into the little E entrepreneur state, which is like the humble entrepreneur of, yeah, I just got an idea, or I've got a product, or I've got something to, you know, to sell people, or something to say, or, you know, whatever it is. And then just do good work. Like, just be passionate about what it is that you do. And if it makes the most sense to do that on your own, then do it. And if it doesn't, then go work for someone else. And then just don't overcomplicate entrepreneurship. I think, you know, Dragon's Den, while it's really cool, also did a really kind of disservice to the entrepreneurial community in the sense of that it makes it seem like entrepreneurship is like big E entrepreneurship, when really it should be a humble thing to do.
Dave, we're almost at the end of our time. And one thing I'd like to ask all of my guests is, you know, it always amazes me how much entrepreneurs are giving back. As busy as we all are, we're, you know, the giving back financially, giving back with our time. Can you maybe talk a bit about what Social does, giving back to the Ottawa community?
Yeah, there's really, I think, two ways you can approach it. We've from about 2011 on, we actually, in our kind of corporate charter bylaws, not that those are real things, but you know, the philosophy of them is that we want to be a quote unquote purpose driven business. And what that means to us anyway is that at least half of our revenue should come from organizations that do good for the world in some way or another. And I think that if you actually look at who those organizations are, they're pretty representative of our portfolio, whether that's in health or education, or some larger nonprofit groups or organizations that do really meaningful stuff. And it's good to have that balance. And so I actually see this idea of giving back as more of a core commitment you have to make, and not some kind of one-off program. I think if you say, oh, every year we do this volunteer activity, or we donate this much money to charity, or we grow our mustaches every November, that's great. But why not do that all the time? Like, why not actually weave community involvement and working with purpose, which is actually our tagline, into your business model? Salesforce talks about, well, businesses talk about triple bottom line. Salesforce has kind of their, you know, they donate 1% of their profits. They give 1% of their time and 1% of their equity to their foundation. I think that you're seeing a lot more of that. And for us, we've made big commitments to organizations like the Children's Hospital of Eastern Ontario, CHEO. I think we've been their kind of pro bono digital partner for, you know, 4 or 5 years now. Probably given up, you know, well over $350,000 worth of service to CHEO in that time. So I think you can do stuff like that, which is very tangible. But then I think also, you know, just elevate your business model to include an element of underlying purpose, but still turn a profit. And that's the whole idea of profit for purpose, is that we are in business to make money. What we do with that money is up to us. And if we choose to invest that in working on purpose-driven initiatives like our stuff with CHEO, then that's great.
Thanks, Dave. Really insightful answer. And I hope our listeners really take it to heart that you can weave it into your overall corporate environment and your structure, that it just comes more naturally and creates a win-win situation. Dave, where can our listeners find out more about Social?
You can find us on the web at social.ca, S-O-S-H-A-L.ca. You can find us on Twitter. You can find us on Facebook. And if you're in the neighborhood, we're at 119 Ross Avenue in Wellington Village. And right above Supply and Demand and next to the Wellington Gastro Pub and some other great restaurants. So if you're ever in the neighborhood and want a drink or a bite to eat, then just pop on up and say hi.
Thanks very much, Dave. I really appreciate your time this morning.
Yeah, thanks so much, Pat.
If your company or organization is looking to improve your marketing, go to the Extension Marketing website at extmarketing.ca and download the free ebook, 7 Steps to Marketing Success.